Welcome to We Mentor Mondays podcast with Nancy. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery. Learn something new from our stories today. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy. For our third mentoring session today, we are in Burnsville with Stevie Ray. He knows comedy and improv in Minnesota and around the world like nobody's business.
And it's nobody's business but my own.
All right. So we'll just leave it there.
There you go.
Okay.
Ain't nobody's business but my own.
Is the co-founder of Stevie Ray's Improv Company in Minneapolis. And he's also an author. And you just were recently telling us, not only do you also, you know, have bees and sell honey, mm-hmm. but you also do reading for...
For the blind. Yes. I was looking for a volunteer opportunity many years ago, and I needed something that was flexible as far as my schedule, so I didn't have to show up someplace at a particular time on a particular day.
You could do it when it worked for you.
Yes. When you do corporate training and speaking and that kind of thing, you have to be pretty available at a moment's notice. And I saw that the Minnesota State Center for the Blind was always looking for volunteers who would record books on tape, so I auditioned. It surprised me how difficult the audition was, and they only accept a third of the people who offer because they're very picky. Minnesota, the State Center for the Blind here, was the pioneer of what's called radio talking book, where if you are visually impaired or blind, you get a special radio, and it is tuned to a frequency nobody else can get. And when you turn it on, there's 24/7 programming of books. And in the morning, it'll be one type of book because those are the type of people that are at home. And then during the day, a different type. And then in the evening, it's more like for kids. And then later at night, it's more for the adult listener, that type of thing. And the rest of the country, many different centers for the blind are copying Minnesota's format of how we built it and developed it. So I get a new book every now and then and spend an hour here and there making recording sessions. And
do they provide the equipment?
Yes, they give me a recording computer, digital computer in my office. When you audition, you've got to read prose, poetry, newspaper articles, a few different types of passages from different types of books, plus 50 medical terms to see if you can pronounce Latin.
Okay.
And 50 legal terms, Latin again, but also a lot of other languages thrown in, Greek and French and that type of thing. And they don't care if you read perfectly. They care if it comes out perfectly, which means when you audition, if you stumble over a word or think you might have mispronounced it, you simply say correction, and then you pronounce it the correct way. Because when you read and record, if you stumble over a word, you just go back and re-record over that.
Right.
So it's perfect in the outcome.
I see.
And the audition is, if you miss a lot of your own mistakes, then they can't trust you to record for other people because you'll let those mistakes slide by and they'll end up in the final recording.
Sure.
So all of our books, when we turn in the discs for recording, are audited by blind auditors, and they send you a report back. Your pace of reading, your inflection, your diction, your emphasis, your listenability,
all
those things are judged by somebody who is an auditor. Even if you turn the page and it's really rustly with the paper, that's not good. If you make a lot of mouth sounds, clicking your tongue and that kind of thing, all
right,
of those
things
distract.
Sure.
And we're known as the best center in the country, so they have a standard to keep up.
Oh, well, that is just a wonderful service to provide.
Oh, yeah.
And it's probably helped you with kind of being even more honed into your skill set.
Much more so.
Oh.
When you get reports back from somebody who can only hear what you do,
right,
that changes things.
Okay, right. Oh, boy, that's a...
And there are books where I'm stopping every other page and going and Googling the word to hear how it's actually pronounced.
Okay.
And making sure that everything is accurate.
Yeah.
Because one book could have derivations from French to Spanish to German to Greek. And you have to pronounce it correctly or they come back at you. They found one word of mine in one book that was off and I heard about it.
Okay.
Yes. One word in the middle of 400 pages.
Okay. Yes.
So they're serious.
Yeah.
They're professionals about this.
Absolutely. Yes.
Now I know how to pronounce that word, believe me. Yes. Even though I never use it in regular conversation. I try to insert it where it doesn't belong just to use it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, right. What's the point of knowing it?
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Oh, so, and how you must also get really into the story while you're reading.
It's an incredible experience. And it's something I believe every professional should do is pick a few things that have nothing to do with their profession, but it has something to do with giving back.
Yeah.
You've got to do something that makes you a part of the bigger world.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, my business partner, Pamela, she will constantly use the phrase, I have to be able to lay my head on my pillow at night with integrity. Mm-hmm. So she checks on what she does all the time.
Yeah.
And for some people, giving back is attending their child's events because you're raising a family and that's time consuming and that's important. Mm-hmm. And so I pick these things because as a professional in the world, I want to make sure I'm giving back. And I also focused on what I consider were my key talents. I can read well and cold reading is not a skill everybody possesses. I speak well. So I thought, okay, reading for the blind is a good marriage of my skills with a need that's out there.
Yeah.
And a lot of the books that I get, I don't enjoy.
Oh, you don't?
No, you're right in the middle of it. You can't quit. I think I'm going to enjoy it when I read the synopsis and I say, hey, send me that one.
Yeah.
And I find out, oh, it's quite a bit different than I expected. I won't name the books out of respect for the authors because there's always somebody who likes it.
Yeah.
But I figure that's my discipline, is to put life into this book that is not my cup of tea because it is somebody else's cup of tea.
Yeah. And that's important.
Yes. And I think that having that kind of discipline, even if it's thrust upon you by outside forces, that's a good thing.
So what's one story that you just totally loved? Yeah.
Well, as I mentioned in previous podcasts, I am, intensely interested in neuroscience and psychology.
Yeah.
And I've had a chance to recommend a couple of books that I've heard about to the State Senate, Center for the Blind. And they've said, yes, let's record it, which is lucky because one, it has to be written. The publication date has to be the same date that you're recording, the same year. So I could not suggest a book written in 2012. It has to be this year.
Yeah.
So that narrows it.
Yeah.
And also it has to appear on some quantifiable list somewhere. Has to be on a top 10, top 100 of a verifiable
list.
New
York Times or something like
that. It's not always a New York Times bestseller, but like you said, something like that.
Yeah.
And so it has to be a book of quality and of worth. Mm-hmm. So there are times when I've said, there was a book about how the brain is wired to connect socially to other brains around it. So rather than internal neuroscience, the neuroscience of groups.
Oh,
and it affects our decision-making in ways we have no idea how other people's activities tell us what to do. That was fascinating to me. Mm. I'm in the middle of a book now that I'm reading four books on tape. I had already previously read it just for my own enjoyment. So I'm doing it twice. Called Smarter, Faster, Better, How to Remain Productive in Life and Business. And these are things I love to bring to my clients.
Yeah.
So I find it doubly enjoyable.
Yeah.
Those are the kinds of things where I say, oh, that's why I got so frustrated 2 months ago when such and such happened. Now I can see right in front of me why that happened.
Yeah.
And I can make different choices down the road.
Yeah.
So I like understanding human behavior that way.
Yeah. It's so, it really informs the rest of your life. Yeah. And gives you a few tips to even change how you're interacting with other people.
Oh, yeah. If I could have full day workshops and describe to my audiences every book I've read, they probably wouldn't enjoy it, but it would certainly be fun for me. And then I read this, and then I, no, come back, everybody.
Yeah. I did my undergraduate degree at Bemidji State, and there was in elementary education, and there was an instructor that was talking, introducing us to children's literature.
Okay.
And he was like the best storyteller. Like, I just totally drooled over every book that he introduced to us. That it, I read all, you know, hundreds of kids' books because of the way he explained it made it so delightful to, like, I couldn't wait to just go and read, you know, 10 kids' books.
Yes.
As soon as I left the class. So
stories that have that power to them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something that is being lost, because all society was in the old days was storytelling. Mm-hmm. Sit around the fire, tell a story. And now, not quite as much. And I think that's a skill that should be fostered with our kids, is how was your day? Tell me about your day.
Yes.
And let them take you from A to Z throughout the whole story without adults interrupting.
Yeah.
Let them get through the whole thing. There are times when my stepdaughter was younger, in her toddler years, where at that age, they're trying to put thoughts together.
Yeah.
And then we had, okay, and you urge is to step in and help them by finishing their thought.
Yeah.
I would bite my tongue and let her struggle through it so she could figure out what she wanted to say.
Yeah.
Because being able to tell a story and keep people engaged.
Yeah, it's a huge skill.
Well, I was at an HR conference once, and one of the beauties of being a trainer slash speaker is you get to listen to everybody else talk before you.
Right.
And they were talking about the world of managing people in a company, HR concerns. And I just soaked up everything they said. But one thing I heard was they can tell you who's going to advance in a company by one skill. Can you give a compelling presentation? That is the defining quality between middle manager and senior executive. And if you cannot give a compelling presentation, you will not advance. Hmm. Because it doesn't matter how smart you are. It matters how well you can move other people to action, get them excited, motivate them, keep them on track, that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
That all comes from capturing them.
Yeah.
And some of the smartest people in the world will never get that.
Yeah.
Because they're too smart.
Absolutely.
So kids should be taught presentation skills, storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to one HR professional who said 4 out of 5 resumes are tossed in the trash without even being considered, for one reason: poor grammar.
Yeah,
I can one little grammatical that. Slip. They're looking for ways to cull the list down.
Right, exactly,
and that's
that'll
one
be
of
one. The ways.
You know, that'll change because the workforce is shrinking, and there's not going to be enough workers and that kind of thing. But still, you look at those skills; those are highly prized, and kids need to be taught those. That there's a reason for it.
Yeah.
And texting sure isn't helping.
No. Well, maybe out of this, there'll be all these nature programs that develop and are bringing the campfire and the stories. And, you know, as long as we can hold on to not having mosquitoes kill us all.
Yes. And, you know, there's always that. I have a bee veil I can wear.
There you go.
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe they'll become in vogue. All right. What else would you like to share with us?
What kind of concerns do your listeners usually have with what they do? What are their challenges?
Many challenges are in business ownership, with kind of making the transition from startup to really, once you like found your niche, like where you start in your business isn't exactly where you will end up growing your business.
Right.
And so when you get feedback and you learn more about customers and where the needs are, then you start developing more of what you're hearing from your customers. And so I hear once people make that leap, one, they're not writing business plans.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to hear your perspective on the one word business plan. But so through the business planning process, I've heard my clients say always, this is helping me to really understand how I'm thinking and what I'm doing and how important understanding the operational ends of business are, mm-hmm. and also, you know, the creativity of producing something for somebody else is really important.
Well, one of the things that, as far as coming up with new ideas, that's very, that's crucial, is you've got to be surrounded by people who will respectfully challenge. Because, like, for instance, the old rule of brainstorming that came out of the 50s mm-hmm. is no idea is a bad idea. That's a classic rule of brainstorming.
Yeah.
And it was actually written, the rules were originally designed by a man named Osborne, who was a marketing executive. And in the 50s, he was observing his teams come up with creative ideas. So out of that anecdotal observation, he created the rules of brainstorming. Hmm. No idea is a bad idea, and quantity begets quality, because the more ideas you have, the more you have to choose from.
And then you build on the ideas.
Build on the ideas. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, modern research has actually proven one of his rules to be false. When groups were put into experiments where some groups were told, brainstorm, but there are no rules whatsoever, do whatever you want. Other groups were told, follow the rule that no idea is a bad idea.
Yeah.
And a third set of groups were told, debate like crazy, really challenge each other, do it respectfully, but still go after the idea.
Yeah.
And what they discovered is the groups that came up with the widest breadth of ideas when rated for creativity.
Yeah.
How far from the norm was the idea?
Yeah.
It's pretty easy to quantify creativity, as well as the highest number of ideas by volume. The groups that did the best were the ones that debated the most, not the ones that said every idea is a good idea. The next best outcome came from the groups with no rules at all. The least productive were the ones that agreed with everything. So that yes. rule has been disproven simply because if I challenge you respectfully, you are forced to justify your plan.
Yes.
That creates more thinking on your part and a broader breadth of creativity yeah. where you go, oh, and here's another thing I thought of. Oh, yeah, and you know, that makes me think of this.
Mm-hmm.
If it's done right, if somebody just said, well, this is a stupid idea, it'll never work, that does not spark creative debate.
Yeah.
It's got to be done with,
yeah.
well, really, I don't agree with you. Why do you think that? I really don't think that idea is going to work.
Yeah.
What makes you think it will?
Yeah.
That spurs it.
Yeah.
Business owners have to have people around them, just like Abraham Lincoln filled his cabinet with people from the opposite political party because he wanted that debate.
Mm-hmm.
Business people have to do the same thing. I like the idea of the one-page business plan.
Yeah.
In fact, you've probably heard the book, The One-Page Business Plan.
Yes.
Makes it very simple, also makes it flexible enough that it can be what it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a guideline, not a set of rules.
Right.
And I follow a construct. One of my books is called Three Big Words. And it's a program I do with large organizations that refocuses entirely what they're doing, because they've gotten so far into the weeds with rules and regulations
right.
that they've forgotten what they're about.
Yes.
I coach them to every day think of the answer the question, what's the one reason we exist? What is the one reason we exist? And I'll use the Mall of America, for example. I was doing this program with them, and I asked large groups of employees, what's the one reason the mall exists? And you can guess what the answer was from most of them.
Shopping.
Sell stuff, shopping.
Yeah.
You know, one guy raised his hand and did the gesture of money between
yeah.
the fingers.
Okay.
I said, if that's the reason you exist, then you're going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who said this first, but one business guru said, money to a business is like oxygen to a human being. No human being says, I'm going to get up today in order to breathe oxygen. It's just that without oxygen, you die.
Yeah.
No business should say, I'm getting up today to earn money.
Yeah.
Without it, you die, but that's not the purpose you're there.
Right.
So that's kind of a good way of looking at it.
It's a nice framework.
It is.
To work
and
from.
So we talked for weeks with the leadership at the mall to figure out the one reason the mall exists, because without it, why should I go there instead of any other mall? And you don't think in terms of better or worse. Customers actually don't like those comparisons. You create distrust and a lack of connection. If I try to say my mall is better than that mall, and here's why, we don't like that.
Yeah.
It's their chicken, we're fish. Which are you hungry for?
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, you'll be hungry for fish because that's what I am. The best companies do better by saying, oh, you're going to go with that company over there? Great choice. I think they're fantastic. You will be happy. Because then they trust you when it's your turn. So the one reason the mall existed became a big source of conversation for weeks. Mm-hmm. And they finally came up with it. It's an internal slogan. The public never knows about it. And it's not supposed to be for advertising. It's supposed to be for internal focus.
Yeah.
And their reason to exist is make someone happy today.
Hmm.
Now, you have a different focus for every employee there. The mall, we're not talking about the stores in the mall, though they're their own employees.
Yeah.
Their employees are the housekeepers, the security people, the maintenance workers, the ride operators in the amusement park, the movie theater employees,
mm-hmm.
some of those small carts that sell cotton candy and things like that, the little food carts. Those are all mall employees. You've got everybody from kids with their first job ever
yes.
to people just about ready to retire. Now, if you look at every one of those jobs, they all have a different reason for being there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem. They don't all focus their energy in the same place.
I see.
Now they're told, of course, you're a security guard.
Yes.
But your job is not to secure the place. That's your function. Your job is to make someone happy. Of course, you're a maintenance worker. You're here to fix something that just broke. But you know what? I can hire any maintenance worker I want to do that because it's a skill set.
Yeah.
How are you going to make people happy while doing it? What that allows them to do is hire properly. Because if a security guard comes in and says, well, it's not my job to make people happy. It's my job to make sure no trouble happens. Good. Go work somewhere else.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a place for you where that's the focus. That's the one reason we exist. Probably at a bank vault or something where you don't have to interact
yeah,
with people.
Right.
Or at Fort Knox or something like that. Or the military. But even the military has a different attitude. They're not as that sticky. Housekeepers, what's your function? To clean. What's your job? Make people happy.
Mm-hmm.
What do you notice that is the opposite of happy? A frowny face on a guest walking by. A confused face on somebody who doesn't know them all that well. You're the housekeeper. You know this place better than anybody. After the workshop, they had housekeepers stopping people saying, you look really confused and lost. I know this place better than anyone. What are you trying to find?
Nice.
Now, they used to wait for customer service reps to do that. Who do you see more of, customer service or housekeeping?
Housekeeping.
Housekeeping.
Yeah.
Now the housekeepers get to go home feeling better. Before it was, how was work? Well, fine, I cleaned. Now it's, how was work? I helped 12 people who were lost get to where they were going, had a great conversation with them, found out they were from Iowa. It was their first time up to Minneapolis. All these things that make life really worth living.
Yeah.
Now they have pride in what they do. What's the one reason you exist? And that's what focuses every day.
Yeah.
Then I ask people, what three things make a successful experience for the people you serve? Three big words. That's why the book is called Three Big Words. What are those words? And for us in our improv school, we had to do this because we realized we were losing students. They were coming in, but they weren't staying.
Yeah.
We asked our instructors and they said, well, we're teaching them improv according to the curriculum. Well, we're not here to teach improv. We're here to improve people's lives. Improv's the vehicle. Now you can choose a Chevy or a Ford. It's still a vehicle. The goal is to get somewhere. You forgot the goal and you focused on the fact that you were driving a Chevy. Who cares?
Yeah.
So we figured out the three big words. I shouldn't say we. My business partner, Pamela, and the school director at the time, Samantha, sat for months figuring this out to refocus.
Hmm.
Every class must be fun, safe, challenging. Three big words. Now we don't ask instructors, did you teach improv well? We say, did you make it fun? If they say, well, the people seem to have a good time. That's not a good answer. What did you do to make sure it was fun? It has to be intentional.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do to make it safe? because this is a risky thing for people to do. It feels a little weird.
Yeah, right. They need to be emotionally safe.
Exactly. Yeah. They need to feel safe. And one of the things they've discovered about teams that make them productive, this is out of that book, Smarter, Faster, Better. Teams are productive when there's a high degree of psychological safety. They can do and say anything they want without fear of recrimination. Without safety, nothing happens. And then what did you do to make it challenging? Because they're here to grow. If we have a nice balance of safe, fun, and challenging, our students get served, and we have a high retention rate. And the teachers are focused in a way that makes them feel like they accomplished something rather than just followed a set of rules.
Yeah.
For every business, they should figure out what's the one reason they exist, the one reason. And then what three big words describe a successful experience for their client or guest or customer. And the words have to be emotional. Safe, fun, challenging. Those are emotional words.
Yes.
We don't use words like competent.
Right.
Or positive outcome. Those mean nothing. Mm-hmm. It has to be a word that has an emotional quality to it. Because that's the only reason that people do what they do. We
mentor. And one last question. Do you have a daily tip that people can use to improve their speaking every single day?
First of all, I write about this in my book called Speaking in Public Without Sweating in Private.
Yeah.
Because most people do. Right. First of all, recognize that speaking to a group is the most unnatural thing a human can do. We are not wired to have communication that is one person speaking to a large number of people. The brain didn't evolve that way. It evolved around the campfire and dinner table. So if you feel fearful about it, it's natural. Hmm. Second, you manage that by doing a couple of tricks. Humor, getting people to laugh, is a unique skill and a powerful one. Mm-hmm. When an audience laughs, they then agree with you. Laughter creates agreement because laughter is a social form of agreeing with each other. Hmm. That's why we laugh 90% of the time, is to agree with what somebody said. If you can get an audience laughing, they relax, they calm, and they agree. You don't want to do it with a joke. Jokes are not natural. You do it with a personal story that they can identify with. It's something that Aristotle was one of the first who theorized about laughter. He called it laughter of recognition. We laugh when we recognize a sameness about us. It crosses all cultural barriers, all age barriers, and gender barriers, and class barriers. Laughter of recognition makes us all the same, because we really are.
Yeah.
And the way to practice laughter, one daily tip, I do this whenever I go into a transactional relationship, going to the store, going to the bank, anywhere where it's a quick transaction between two anonymous people, you take control of that and don't let it remain anonymous and transactional. I say something to the other person that has nothing to do with the transaction. Now, it can be not funny, just a comment on, hey, nice tie, or those are wonderful earrings you're wearing. That wakes people up.
Right.
What it does for you is it trains you to initiate conversation that you are mastering. You're in control of it. And that's an important thing. Then I try to add funny whenever I can, because funny is a muscle. You can practice it. Mm-hmm. And humor is something that is trainable. I went to Target once, and all I was doing was buying a small little pack of batteries. And I was standing in the line for 12 items or less behind everybody who had 30 items in their cart. And the young lady at the checkout thing, bleep, bleep, bleep. And everybody, she said, would you like a bag for this? Would you like a bag for this? Would you like a bag for this? She's just a robot.
Yeah.
I get up there. She grabs my little pack of batteries. Beep. Would you like a bag for this? I said, no, but I will need help out to the car. You should have seen her face. She was like short circuited.
Yeah.
She didn't know what to do because I shook her out of her
comfort zone,
her robotic thing.
Yes.
And then she went, oh, I get it. Cut it out. You're funny. Every time I get an opportunity to say something like that, after a while, it becomes more comfortable. Mm-hmm. And then it helps my speaking be more naturally funny. Somebody calls and I see it's a client's name on caller ID, and I'll pick up the phone and go, Bill Johnson Fan Club. And they'll go, oh, it's not what they expect. What right. do they expect? Stevie Ray's Improv Company, how may I help you?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's just boring.
Yeah.
Every chance I get, I will comment on something I see and make a funny comment about it.
Nice.
And when I go into a restaurant and the hostess or host is standing there, I'll go, oh, not you again. Now, that's not widely funny. Woo, that's crazy. It's just a little bit different.
Yeah.
And they go, what? I say, oh, they must not have got the petition we all signed. Things yeah. like that keep you sharp.
Yeah, absolutely.
And one way to get over any fear you have of speaking, and this is a brand new revelation through some research about public speaking. What you do is you trick your brain. Brains are meant to predict an outcome. And it's always predicting the outcome of what you're about to do. The brain is bad at doing that. It often predicts a negative outcome. It's just wired that way. The uh-oh. So you have to trick it into predicting a positive outcome without it knowing it. And the way you do that is you think back to the last time you did a similar activity, whether it's speaking to a group or holding a meeting or having a difficult conversation one-on-one.
Yeah.
You think back to the last time you did it really well. And then you dig out every detail of that experience. What was I wearing? What was the room like? What kind of day was it? What did I say? What did they say? How did I react? If you remember in minute detail everything that happened of a successful experience, it tricks your brain into thinking that's yeah. the way the future experience is going to be. And there's a process called psychological consistency. If you predict an outcome, the brain will make sure that outcome happens because it's very important to the brain to be accurate in its prediction. Mm-hmm. If you predict a negative outcome, it'll sabotage it and make it negative.
Yeah.
No matter how important it is for it to work out, it has to be right. It's much more concerned about being right than it is having a good experience.
Yeah.
So if you say, oh man, this meeting's going to suck, it'll make sure it sucks. So you just say, okay, this is what happened before. This is what happened before. And it thinks, well, then that's what's going to happen again. And at the end, you'll think, well, that went well. I wonder why. You really won't know what you did differently. It's all yeah. subconscious.
Yeah.
So for those things, for any business person, for any interaction.
Yeah.
For a sales call.
It also makes it just more fun.
Yes.
You know, for both people.
Well, because you have a mastery of your space. I'm a martial artist. I've been doing that for close to 40 years. And that's a phrase we use in the martial arts. Own your space.
Yeah.
And owning your space does not mean dominating somebody else's.
Right.
It means allowing them to own their space while you own yours. So it's more cooperative. And that means also you don't give up your space. You don't let somebody else dominate you. And if everybody gets to own their space, there's mutual respect. It's a lot more fun.
Absolutely.
And you get more done. More productive, yeah. more successful.
Yeah, because you're not preoccupied exactly. with somebody being in your space.
It creates a greater cooperation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I tell the younger students in the martial arts, when we spar, if you try to fight me, I will win because I get to use that against you. Martial arts, fighting is more like a dance. It looks like two people cooperating when actually they're mastering each other's space in a way that controls the outcome.
It's fascinating.
Yes.
Yeah. Great. Well, thank you so much for all the words of wisdom and a lot of history and sharing your upbringing with us. I think that it's always good to hear, you know, how people have arrived at where they're at and kind of, what are you thinking about the future?
Oh, we are actually, we're rarely the same company for very long before we change something. Mm-hmm. That's just our nature.
Yeah.
And now we're focused on more than ever using improv to improve people's lives. So we started the Skills for Life project, which is taking our improv training to domestic abuse shelters and homeless shelters, helping the mentally ill, the incarcerated, senior citizens, kids trying to get jobs right out of college, in need populations, as well as those who are not in need. We're just finishing up a series of workshops for a domestic abuse shelter, where the workshops for the women are helping them go out and have job interviews and dealing with landlords to get housing and dealing with the court system with confidence.
Boy, a really practical approach. Practical.
And then also for their kids.
People's lives. Yeah.
For their kids to deal with self-confidence and believing in themselves and that type of thing. And we're going to be working with another organization that's a homeless shelter to help them learn how to present themselves in ways that will get them what they want, a job, a place to live.
Yeah.
So the Skills for Life project is one of our big focuses to help people improve their lives.
Well, I've been really impressed with how you've lived your life.
Oh, thank you.
And
tell that to my wife and little girl. Are you listening, you two?
That's what I was going to say when you were mentioning with each transaction, you know, make it memorable.
Oh, yeah.
Because my daughter always cringes because I do that all the time.
Oh, yeah. And my little one said the other day, you know, you're just lame, right? And one time she said, people actually pay you to be funny because you're not.
Oh, great.
Said, oh, yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah, right. Oh, lucky you're not. You're beyond that point
in your
self-esteem.
Yes.
Yes.
No, I'm not.
All right. Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Third session was awesome. Again, I'll pull together a lot of information from this so our listeners will have a lot of resources to tap into and to connect with you and your work.
Sounds good.
Okay, great. And Mike Cabea, my sound engineer and photographer, thanks for being here. Audience, thanks for tuning in, and you've got a ton of practical skills to implement today, so get out there and get working on it. Become a better leader. All right, see you next Monday. Bye.